Welcome along to the Rugby Pass podcast. This is the Short Ball with Scotty and Mills. I'm back, Mills.
Yeah, you're back, bro. You are back.
What's been happening? What have you been doing without me?
Oh, McConey's been filling in.
How's that been going? That would have been good.
He sung on the first his first slot.
He loves a sing along.
I didn't realise he can actually sing.
No, he's got a great voice.
Yeah, I
put an order. It goes Celine Dion, James McConey, Cher, the three greatest voices in modern pop music.
Yeah, that's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
He was. He got me a couple of times.
Singing?
No, like his knowledge of sport is fantastic. I was just thinking, short ball, rugby. But then he starts sort of talking about other sports. And I was like, oh, actually, I do remember seeing that, football.
That's right.
Yeah, amazing.
He's what we call in the business a tangential man.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he likes to take you places where you just don't expect to go.
You don't, and I didn't.
Yeah.
It stumped me a little bit there.
Yeah, I know. But I'm back now. You're in your comfort place.
I am.
You're caressing that microphone. I just don't know what you do. Trying to eat the mic sock. I don't know what you're doing with it.
I'm imitating eating an apple.
Why are you imitating eating an apple?
I just feel like an apple. Mm. A red one.
I had an apple this morning.
Did you? You need a lot of vitamins, mate.
What are you trying to say?
Well, you've come back with this head cold.
With scurvy.
I don't know. So you've either picked it up from the aircon off the plane.
No.
Or it's that whiskey you were drinking on the plane.
The soju. Can I just tell you something about the Korean people? And this is, I know I'm making a generalization here, and it was very cold. I know our listeners in the north at the moment are going through a snowy patch. But minus 20 is an aggressive temperature. But the thing about the Korean people is that they love to turn the aircon up to around about the temperature of Venus or Mercury.
Oh, really?
And that included the plane ride home. So a Korean head cold on my last day at the Winter Olympics, followed by a 3-hour bus ride, followed by a 12-hour plane trip, all of which were air conditioned to within an inch of my life. Yeah, probably the worst travel experience. I like to call Korean Air the starvation airway because also they don't feed you much on a 12-hour flight. They give you a bit of dinner and, it's all right. And then literally nothing. They just disappear. Every cabin crew member just disappears for the next 8 hours. And you're sitting there. And if you wake up on a long-haul flight, you're hungry, generally speaking.
Are you not one of those passengers that sort of keep pressing the old...
No, I would get up. I would go to the galley. They're all sitting and having a chat in the galley. And but it's like I'm literally dying of thirst. I couldn't... The first time I went up, I couldn't even say water. Everything was so, because I'd had some really confrontational Korean cold medication too before I got on. I don't know what's in that shit, but wowee, that'll get you.
Did you bring some back?
Yeah, I did. I think it sucks every single molecule of water out of your body in order to dry your sinuses. Because when the pharmacist at the airport gave it to me, he started laughing. That's a weird thing to do. Someone who's got a head cold and he orders some head cold medicine, the guy starts cracking up. Hand over your cash. And he's still giggling as I left. I'm like, I don't know what he's given me.
Oh, he would have been thinking, got this foreigner.
Yeah, it's good to be back in rugby though. Although Winter Olympics, man.
Oh, it looked awesome.
So good.
Some crazy suckers, man.
Yep. The great thing, I got to watch the opening full weekend of Super Rugby while I was over there, and the games looked exciting. And, I was thinking to myself, can't wait to get back into footy. But by the same token, watching kids free ski, half pipe, slopestyle, big air, I mean, an insane event, the Winter Olympics. I've been very lucky to go to two now. And, man, I cannot fathom how these kids even learn to do that stuff without killing themselves.
Yeah. Mate, I mean, I don't know how they do some of those things. I've barely sort of stood on Max's skateboard and let the dog sort of pull me. And as soon as it goes anything over five steps, I'm out. No good, mate. So
that goes for surfing, skateboarding, roller skating, ice skating, rollerblading, whatever. You can't do anything like that. As soon as you feel your feet have got no control over your movement, you're done.
I'm done. Surfing's not too bad. I'm up there, but the thought of being on a skateboard on concrete and getting faster and faster and being able to balance yourself, I'm out. I'm off there. So if these kids are flying in the air, doing loops and whatever.
Yeah, triple flips. So get this, I'm sure a lot of you listening would have watched some of the Winter Olympics, at least I certainly hope so, but covered a lot of the half pipe stuff, snowboard and free ski. So the walls of the half pipe are 22 feet high. Right? Now, that's high enough. But then they jump out of the pipe another 5 meters. So you can add another 15 feet plus on top of that.
Yeah.
So if you get that wrong, you're going to land on your head sometimes up to 40 feet straight down onto the bottom of an icy half pipe.
Yeah, when you're talking ice, we're not talking this powder in the soft landing, are we?
We're not talking soft landings. I watched a Korean guy. He was, it's not funny, but it kind of is. In practice for qualifying for the free ski half pipe, and this guy comes up for a hit, for a trick, leaves the pipe, comes crashing down on the lip of the half pipe, smash straight down on his skis. He falls forward, knocks himself out cold. And he is motionless on the lip of the pipe. And then he just slowly, as if in some movie scene, one arm flopped over the edge of the pipe and the rest of the body followed. He slid into the bottom of the pipe. And I swear to God, there's about 5,000 people watching. Every single person thought this guy was dead. And you're like, what the fuck are these kids up to? Anyway, he survived.
Right.
Yeah, he survived. And he competed.
And he did it. He would have got up and did it. Oh, shit.
Crashed out twice, mind, but I'm not surprised. What about Nico Porteous, the Kiwi kid who won bronze in that event? The biggest trick he pulled in that pipe, no one has ever seen done in competition.
Oh, yeah.
He's 16 years old. Get this too. He crashed during practice trying that trick and was terrified about doing it. He gets to the final of the Olympic Games and pulls off a trick he's scared to do most, nails it. Only two other guys, said one of the judges to me, have ever tried that in competition. Tried, mind. And that is Alex Ferreira, the silver medalist, and David Wise, the 2x gold medalist. And not even those two have ever pulled it off in competition. 16-year-old Kiwi kid. What a ripper.
That is awesome.
Champion man. He turned up to the post-celebration in a leather jacket and Speed Dealer Sunnies too.
Did he?
Oh, yeah. Oh, mate. Yes, boy. Me, oh, my. We better get into some footy today on the short ball. We're going to talk a little bit of controversy around cards. We're going to talk about the round of games from a Kiwi perspective coming up in this week 2.5, 3.5, 2.5, whatever we are right now. We're going to call it week 3 anyway. Millsy, first of all, we spoke about this on our telly show team talk just last night.
Yeah.
The yellow card, red card, high tackle controversy, and we're calling it a controversy because it seems to have been the talking point of the opening full round of Super Rugby. You know, talking with our colleague Steve Bates last night, he seemed to be in agreement with me. What are the refs supposed to do in these situations? We are talking about a game that is on the cusp of having its own concussion issues, just like the NFL is, just like other contact sports have been through. If the referees aren't doing anything about contact with the head, who is?
Yeah, and when you brought this up last night, I sort of thought about it a little bit. It took me a while to think about it. I thought about it last night when I got home as well. I think different scenarios, okay? There's a scenario, and I was thinking in terms of the scenario where the right, you know, Crotty got hit and then, you know, there's a yellow card. And I was thinking, well, as a player, you know, how do you get yourself out of that? Yes, he did hit him. Well, Crotty was going quite low. Well, how do you get yourself out of that? And it's you just can't. And so from a playing perspective, I was thinking, well, it possibly wasn't a yellow card. But then your point, you know, being, you know, hitting the head and things like that, and you look at some of the players that have had concussion. Well, I've been fortunate enough I haven't. And you don't hear the stories. You don't hear the stories of the things that those guys have gone and are still going through. And so I came to the, I suppose, conclusion that the refs have to do what they have to do. And it's all down to technique. That's that scenario, the Crotty scenario that I'm talking about, that's a little bit different, but I now believe that the refs got it right. And they actually, and Ben Batesy brought it up last night, they needed someone to come out and say that. Just come out and say, well, yes, they got it. They here it is. They got it right. Rather than spend this whole week, this next week, two, 3 weeks, talking about whether it's right or wrong.
Yeah, I agree with that point. I spoke to Bryce Lawrence, New Zealand's referee's boss today, and he's very happy to come on the pod, so we'll keep you posted that. Hopefully we can get him on next week on the short ball, so we can discuss some of these issues around referee communication with the public. But let's just talk about that tackle rule at the moment, because everyone thinks the game is, well, not everyone. I'll correct myself here. There's a certain sector of the population, and it tends to be that same old testosterone-related masochistic macho element of society, that every time a player gets sin-binned for a high tackle, the game has gone soft. I refute that.
Mm.
Absolutely refute that, because there is no one making the statement that would last 10 minutes in a game of Super Rugby. And we're not just talking about tackles here. The number of car crash level collisions that our professional rugby players undergo every season, and the New Zealand Herald's Gregor Paul wrote a great piece on this a couple of weeks ago, the damage to your body is significant without even considering the attrition of high shots in our game. Ken Quarry, who's done a lot of work with New Zealand Rugby, posted a report today. It was a video analysis of head injuries and tackles. And what's remarkable about this is the report made World Rugby change its sanctions laws around high tackles, i.e. referees are more empowered to give cards yellow and red when the tackles are high. But in this report, they conclude that 76% of all head injury assessments in rugby union are caused or come from the tackle area.
Oh, yeah.
What is significant about this report too is that the tackler is almost three times more likely to be concussed than the tackled player. Now, to me, that doesn't really talk a bit to the card issue and the dangerous tackle. But what it says to me is that we have got an issue around coaching tackling technique.
Yes.
And the dominant tackle has become the most dangerous thing in the game. And the imperative to make sure you go high so you force a player backwards instead of going around the legs and letting them get the forward momentum, that has had a massive impact on our concussions in the game of rugby. That is a coaching issue.
Yep.
That is not a player issue.
No, and you're absolutely right. I mean, I was down at the first game, the Highlanders Blues game, and I was sitting, you know, on the sideline, sort of halfway up the stadium, and the way these guys threw their bodies into contact, and that's purely because of that. From an attacking point of view, they want to win the contact. From a defensive point of view, they're wanting to smash the crap out of them to win that contact. Now, and one of them got knocked out because he just threw himself at a attacker. And so it's down to technique. If you get your technique right, you're not going to slide high. Mm-hmm. Okay, if you get your technique right, you know, you get your head in the right position. Now, they're the coaches always want a bit of mongrel, okay? That's the physicality of it, and that's perhaps what people are saying, you know, giving yellow cards, you're going soft. Well, you're not, man. The amount of physicality in the game these days is absolutely immense, and so you've got to try and protect these guys. And giving yellow cards for high shots for lack of technique, okay, is the way to go.
Ken Quarry also, while he tweeted this paper, it's from the Science of Sport, and you can look up Ken Quarry on Twitter. That's at Ken Quarry, Q-U-A-R-R-I-E, and Ken's an expert in head injury assessment and other issues medical in the game. The thing that he says here is that, you know, does a card, and which is to the detriment of your team, as we saw twice on the weekend, the Blues suffered because of a card, the Chiefs suffered because of a card. Does that outweigh the benefits of a dominant tackle for coaches? Because we've already got rush defences, so players are coming up quick and putting themselves in prone positions.
Yeah.
We've got the dominant tackle issue, where you are rewarding players for dominant tackles. Every weekday after a game, where you're having your review, players are getting big ticks for dominant tackles. Yeah. Sam Kane, probably the best in the country at them.
Percentage, yeah.
But the dominant tackle, by its very nature, means you're going higher than you need to go in the tackle to start with. You can't lift a player. So the danger now of going low and actually having their legs over the 45 or over the 90, that's too high to go low.
Yeah.
It's too dangerous to go high. So we're back now to teaching players to go and wrap kids around the ankles. And also now you can't do the chop tackle where you lie down flat on the ground and let a player trip over. So we're literally legislating every legal tackle out of the game.
Yeah.
Because nothing seems to satisfy the safety of a player. If that's the case, yours, touch.
Yeah, I mean, when you put it that way,
it's a really fraught situation.
Yeah, and you say that, and that's the way when coaches are picking teams and they're looking at the defensive, there's certain criterias, you know, and the criteria is obviously, one of them is obviously the offload.
Yeah.
The ability to be able to slow that pill down because you've won the physical contact. And so that's what guys are looking for. They're looking to hit a little bit higher around the ball area and to wrap things up so they don't get the offload. The interesting thing also, you know, in speaking to Steve Jackson last night, they're obviously trying to adapt to to the yellow cards. Mm. And so what is that saying? You know, that's saying, well, guys, they're accepting the fact that some guys will get yellow carded. And so if you adapt to a yellow card, well, what are they doing to a yellow card? They're obviously not going to start smashing guys the way they are. So there's obviously a way that they're looking at trying to, I suppose, limit, you know, getting another yellow card.
Yeah. Look, you know, I've been on record before and I've defended certain high tackles. I defended Sam Kane in the Irish test a couple of years ago. And I remember, you know, Gordon Darcy sort of saying, I'm out of line. You know, it's got to be about player safety. And I got my back up at the time and I thought, oh, you know, that whatever. You know, it's a fair, solid hit. But the more I watch and the more I meet players who have been forced out of the game, and I'm not saying all of those concussions are tackle-related, and I'm not trying to conflate here, but what I am saying is that, you know, we've got to get the tackles down low. Corey Flynn was with us last night on the show. You know, he talked about the fact that if you start a tackle at the upper arm, you're going to slip up.
Yeah.
If you start it below the elbow, you're not.
No. Yeah.
That's basically fundamentally the answer to this problem.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. The one thing that I can say, okay, we're talking about the tackling and things like that, but it's the thing that really gets me also is the off-ball stuff. You know, I mean, there's an incident in the weekend, the Bulls versus the Hurricanes, okay? Forget the tackle stuff. It's all that niggly things. And I think, I can't remember who it was. I think Vince Ussel, you know, got one to the chin.
Yeah.
And they've gone upstairs to check it. I can't remember. I think it was the prop. And Marius Jonker are up there. This is where the grey area becomes grey. You know, he's sitting up there looking, typical swinging arm to the chin.
And I assume Vince Ussel at the time has got nothing to do with the play.
All he's gone and done is looked at the ball. He's on his knees, swinging arm, hits him in the chin. The ref has had a look at it because of the replays. Sure. He's then asked Marius to have a look at it, which he has, and he's come back and said it's medium contact.
But that, exactly right. I mean, if you're going to swing an arm at a player, especially one who's doesn't even have the ball, the clean-out area is a joke. How many guys get taken out, not even anywhere near the ball in the clean-out area?
Yeah, I mean, that's clear-cut, okay, yellow card. And that, I mean, they've got to try and stop that. But that just amazed me when he said medium sort of contact. It looked like that. And so, you know, the Higginbottom, he went. He got a red card, I think. And guys know, you know when you're going into contact what your intentions are, and those sort of things they've got to try and stomp. The tackle is a little bit different, but they have to try and they have to do something about it.
Yeah, I go back to our original point though, Millsy. I mean, you know, you've got so many contact areas in the game that carding someone for a high shot, whether intentional or not, and most high tackles aren't intentional, they're knee-jerk reactions or you just get in bad position. It's one way to take an element out of the game that we know is particularly dangerous. You know, it doesn't matter if you're the tackler or the tackle ball player. If you go high as the tackler, you're more likely to get yourself knocked out.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the basic truth about that report and why I think we need to be very vigilant about how we attack or how we question referees around their use of cards in the game. It's got nothing to do with going soft. It's got everything to do with making sure that you can mitigate as much as possible for the natural contact of an attritional, competitive, aggressive sport. And I've got no issue with that at all. It's going to be competitive tonight at Eden Park. Me oh my, yes boy.
Yeah.
Chiefs have gone 12 straight undefeated against the Blues. Yeah. The Blues have won one of their last 23 against New Zealand opponents, although last year they never lost to a QB opponent by more than double digits.
Double digits or something. Yeah.
We talked to Steve Jackson, assistant coach, last night, Millsy, and we just asked him point blank, have you guys lost the belief in winning? Do you not know how to win anymore? I don't know what it is with the Blues. You know, people will talk about the fact they haven't had a first 5-8 or they haven't had this or they don't have this. It is just a collective lack of self-belief in that team. It can't be anything else because on paper, every single season, they are at least the equal of every other team when you look at their top 23.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Yeah, I said it probably just after Christmas that I thought that the Blues would be good this year. And they have, man. Last week they showed, you know, that was a fantastic game against the Highlanders. Yeah, they got the yellow card and things didn't quite go their way. I think the belief you're sort of alluding to is it's those real key moments. And when you're sort of in the back of your mind, you know you haven't won against this team all of a sudden. I mean, there was a clear one against the Highlanders where they got a penalty. I think they might have tapped it or something. They're clearly in the Highlanders' half, but they ended up getting backpedaled, you know, 40-odd metres. Yeah. And then they started shoveling crap around. And unfortunately, in those moments, the Highlanders are just all over them. And so is there a belief that they can get themselves out of that? And Steve mentioned, you know, they do talk about, you know, the what ifs. What if this happens? What if that's happened? What's a contingency plan? But when you sort of know deep down that you've been in those times, you know, year in, year out and lost them,
yep,
there must be a thinking process there.
The Crusaders will go into a game, they'll be 14 points down with 10 minutes to go, they'll believe they can win it.
Yeah.
The Highlanders will do the same. In fact, we saw that last year against the Cheetahs.
Yes, yes.
The Hurricanes have created that belief first under Hammett, now under Boyd.
Yeah.
The Chiefs certainly had it under Rennie.
Yeah.
The Blues are the only team you look at, they're 14 points behind with 10 minutes to go and you go, the game's done.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds unfair, and I'm not trying to be. I'm just trying to rationalise what it is with this team. Because if the fans look at it that way and the pundits look at it that way, what are the players genuinely thinking?
Yeah.
You've been in teams before, Millsy, where you couldn't buy a trick, right?
No.
I mean, how hard you tried.
No.
That is tough on the soul.
Yeah.
And there are players in that team who've been around long enough now to know that it is a grind with that team year in, year out. I mean, a guy like James Parsons, what has he been to the playoffs once?
Yeah. Yeah, and you say that, and all of a sudden something happens, you know, bounce of the ball doesn't go, then look what happened.
Yeah.
It happened against the Highlanders, that little wee chip kick, Augustine had it covered, bounce of the ball went the other way, try time. Last year when they played the Crusaders, they were up by a million points.
Yep.
What happened? The Crusaders came back, and so it does. Look, I generally believe this is a different Blues team. I absolutely, and I think they'll win tonight, but they've got to start sort of, if they can build on a win tonight, next week they're in South Africa, which is massive. If they can do that, then I think it'll bring back a lot of that confidence that they lack.
I agree with you. I think one win over a Kiwi team,
yeah,
start of the season, and all of a sudden it goes away.
Yeah.
The pressure goes away, the belief grows, and we start seeing the Blues play footy again.
Yeah.
I genuinely believe that. I mean, people could laugh as much as they like, but I know this team is talented.
Oh, man, yeah.
And I know that underneath all of this woe and despair, there is just something waiting to break out here in Auckland, and by God, does Auckland need a footy team to actually deliver. Let's move down the line. Rat Feeney and the boys are here with the Stormers taking on the Crusaders. Crusaders last week just looked like the machine never stopped rolling over summer, mate. Wowee.
Man. And I mean, a lot of their sort of known players and more experienced players, you know, were quite rusty. But, you know, to pull out a performance like that, and yeah, I know, you know, and the Chiefs will say, you know, the Chiefs supporters will say, you know, they're down in with one man and they're still quite in the game. But they just keep rolling out and rolling out. And, you know, Batesy, and we spoke about it last night on Team Talk, the belief that they've got, and, you know, to go to that line out, okay, you know, they were down, they're up by three, go to that line out, miss the line out, but to come back and do it again,
yeah,
mate, I'll be looking for points, you know, and so it just keeps rolling on with the Crusaders. Nothing changes.
You're on the short pool with Mills and Scotty. We're talking Super Rugby Crusaders at the moment. Sam Whitelock, here's a question for you, Mills. Is he the most effective captain in world rugby right now?
I'd say they have to be. He is just calm, and he's, you know, often when you're in the game and in that moment and you're up, you've got to sort of step back a little bit as a captain and try and think, and it's a hard thing to do. And but he's just all over. He knows what's going on. He knows when to win the moments, and he's got pure belief in his team. And there's a lot of the guys just feed off that. And so I'd have to say at the moment he would be.
Are the Stormers a chance here? South Africans record at AMI Stadium, in fact in Christchurch in general, is abysmal.
Mm.
This is a Stormers team that I think won a lot of respect last year,
yeah,
for the way they played the game,
yeah,
not just for their results. Are they going to believe they can come to Christchurch against the defending champions and get the job done?
Look, I think they've got to take some belief. You know, I think last week they lost against the Waratahs in that last little play when they missed the line out. Of all the South African teams that we've got, I think, you know, the Stormers are traditionally, they traditionally travel well. You know, they, a lot of South African teams target a couple of games or one game. So, you know, they've got to. Yes, in the back of their mind, they know these the Crusaders are defending champs. But as I said, you know, I think that they travel better than a lot of the others. So you got to give themselves a chance.
Speaking of South Africans, what about Johnny Mitchell and the difference he's made at the Bulls? I mean, do we give him a bit of cred here? Because that is a big scalp first up for a Bulls side that has struggled in recent years to come out and beat the Hurricanes. Okay, Chris Boyd said worst Hurricanes performance he can remember in his tenure. Be that as it may,
yeah,
the Bulls won that game fairly and squarely. They look super well organised and tactically very aware. I know John and have a lot of respect for John Mitchell. I know that some New Zealanders still haven't got over the events of 15 years ago, and that's okay. Some people were directly affected by that, others weren't.
Mm.
But, you know, having met John subsequently and talking to him about that time with the All Blacks, I mean, he was 36 years old when he coached the All Blacks. It's ridiculous that anyone was ever given a job at that age. You know, 15 years have gone by, and you'd have to say now that he's a middle-aged man with a lot of coaching experience. I think he's a genuine change agent, and talking to friends who coached with him at the US, he's got the US Eagles to the World Cup. He's come back to the Bulls as director of rugby. He seems to have that program hissing again. Look, I think the Bulls, and I'd love to see them back because I love the Bulls. I think the Bulls are super rugby from a South African point of view. I know the Lions have been top dogs for a couple of seasons, but there's something about the Bulls. You've been there, Millsy, to Loftus. Mate. It is a nightmare.
Yeah, absolute nightmare. And it is. You have to compliment Mitch and what he's done because, as you say, and a lot of what goes on in the coaches, it's interesting when you talk to different coaches, you need a bit of bad experience to come away a lot better. And when you say 36, far out, I didn't realise it was 36 when you took the All Blacks. And so, and I like the style. You talked about tactics that they went into. You know, last year, mate, they didn't know what sort of game they wanted to play. They got some big locks that wanting to offload. And it's becoming really evident now in the South African game, isn't it? That they're wanting to play a fast tempo game and bring a bit of skill. And they've obviously
big mobile locks.
Exactly.
Luke De Jager is, mate, you know, we talk about Brodie Retallick over here, and fair enough, but Luke De Jager is a weapon.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Like, so he's obviously come in and changed a little bit of that tactical awareness, should I say, and sort of upskilled them on their skill level, because certainly it's paying off. And I suppose there'd be one person that's smiling, that's Erasmussen, who's just been given the Springbok coaching
job. Oh, Russie Erasmus, one of the great names in coaching. Russie. Exactly right. Mills, we round out the short ball today with chat about the Canes. They're in Argentina to face the Juarez. The Barretts start together for the first time since Geordie injured his shoulder. When was that? Last season, semi-final time. A big moment for Geordie Barrett coming back and Barton Barrett obviously getting his start for the year. I'm looking forward to seeing what that combination can conjure up. I thought it got tired at the end of last season. It looked like it had just been drained of its genuine rugby essence.
Yeah.
But maybe coming back fresh, Geordie having had that November tour off, Buddy having had a bit of a break over summer, I'm genuinely excited about seeing this work. And I think TJ will appreciate having Bowden there just to bounce off, really.
Yeah, have a voice of experience, really, and to help him out a bit. Brad Shields will probably appreciate that too. But I think Geordie, I think he'll be fresh, you know, from a guy that was outstanding as a youngster last year and starting for the All Blacks at fullback. You know, obviously he was hit by injury, but he's had that good time off now to reflect on that and come back buzzing again. So, whereas usually when you've gone into a really good season, you know, you kind of come back and thinking, well, I have to do that all over again, you know. So he'll come back hungry. They're going to need those guys to step up, you know, because they've got to get some points out of this tour. And, you know, I know the Aguades are usually easy beats, but at home they're a different story, you know, especially with some great support. So, and, you know, it could be, if they don't come away with the points and to come back home, you know, it's going to be a massive ask being, you know, zero on board in three games under your belt.
I totally agree with you. And the one place where the Hurricanes were beaten up last week was in the pack.
Yep.
And this Hugwitters pack that has been named for this game is, they're no slouches.
No.
And they'll be coming at you. So, yeah, we'll watch the space. So that's the weekend of Super Rugby. Last things today, Millsy, a bit of a note for a couple of our mates. Jerome Kainor announcing his retirement from New Zealand rugby. at the end of this Super Rugby season, and Wyatt Crockett announcing his retirement from international and Super Rugby. He'll still be playing in New Zealand for the Mako. Two great servants to the game, and I guess the mission now is to get Crockett to 200 Super Rugby caps. He's only 12 away.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be huge. And you know, I think Razor's already said they're going to give him do as much as they can to make sure he gets that 200. Jerome going over to France. It's you know, two very good servants. And you think back, I was thinking back when I was playing with them, and you know what they've fed now and growing up and matured in life, and what they've given to the All Black jersey, and especially their families, the sacrifice they've had to endure as well has been massive. So, bit sad that they're leaving, but also happy for them too, because they, you know, they're going to have a step into the next chapter of their lives, which is something a little bit different.
Not everyone gets to plan their own departure, do they?
No, they don't, and that's probably one of the wonderful things about both of these players, that you know, they've planned it themselves. They weren't forced out of it through injury or non-selection, and that's what you want as a player, and being around that long, you don't want to be sort of, you know, thrown out and forgotten. You want to leave on your own terms, and certainly these two have done their country proud and their provinces, and they'll do so on that note.
Well said, Millsy.
Oh, cheers, mate.
No, that's all right. That's it for another week, guys. That's a short ball. Great to be back with you. Enjoy the weekend, Super Rugby. Every match, of course, live and exclusive to Rugby Pass viewers. Get online, rugbypass.com.